Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org and on the WDIY app, as well as many streaming services. Podcasts are available as well. We are not taking calls this evening. If you have questions, you can certainly submit those through email at yourfinancialchoices.com, yourfinancialchoices.com. So tonight, talking about what is financial freedom? Well, I think it's very personal, and I think that everyone would probably agree with that. What is it, and what does it mean to you? And sometimes what's baked into that is perhaps experiences you had yourself either growing up or going into adulthood or in relationships. You start to understand the impact that financial matters can have on, you know, relationships, on your lifestyle, on your emotional state, on your well-being. To me, kind of taking responsibility and trying to understand how your financial life works, I think, gives you more freedom. I am a frustrated wannabe teacher. I love helping to educate people. I'm so grateful that I can do that through this radio show right here on WDIY, because I think that with the education, you're going to be empowered to perhaps take a little bit more control over your financial situation if you otherwise wouldn't have been able to. Meaning sometimes people inherit, or, you know, they have parents who might teach them good habits as they're growing up, or, you know, you just naturally might have some discipline and that may not be as available to other people. Sometimes people grow up in households that are maybe more chaotic, maybe paycheck to paycheck, maybe broken families. So you have to understand that we all come into our financial decisions, our financial awareness, our financial independence and freedom based on that history. And whether or not we can lean into it, engage with it, or overcome it. So I think if we kind of talk about what financial freedom means and you understand what it means for yourself, you know, that's kind of a first step in understanding that you can empower yourself in it. For myself, and I know my husband and I, we've been together for a very long time. I was 17 when I met him, and we both came from large families. I was fifth of six kids, and my husband was second of seven, and very humble beginnings. And I would say we grew up in households that if you wanted something, you had to earn it for yourself. He even was more constrained than myself, because in his family, it was all about academics, 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 and you needed to excel in that. And that did not always support the support of getting jobs. In my family, it was much more work, 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 work. And, you know, which is great. I said, that's one of the best examples my parents gave, which was hard work, because I think that really benefited all of us in understanding that you work hard, you do a great job, you excel in your profession or your position, and that continues to support you in your financial endeavors. As I've matured, I've gone beyond just, I think that my husband and I would say that we didn't want to have to think about what we spent money on. That was our thought of what independence meant. We didn't have to think about what we spent money on. But then what I really like to see for my clients and for myself is having options. So to me, financial freedom is really about having options in your financial decisions, and that you're not forced into a decision because of financial constraints. You know, I like options to be, you know, positive and healthy options, not like, oh, shoot, I have to do this, but more about, you know, kind of giving a menu to either yourself or to clients in my case. And all within reason, obviously, because, you know, if someone says, well, I want the option of buying a $5 million house on the water, well, is that really, you know, reasonable? When I'm talking about options, I'm talking about, you know, to live, you know, a healthy life, a comfortable life, and make the best choices with the options that you have within the means and, you know, parameters that you've established for yourself. For example, you might have a couple who decides to have a family, and one decides, you know, they decide together that it makes sense for one to stay home and raise the kids and the other one has the job. Well, that is going to be, that's an option for you. And that could lead to different decisions and consequences than someone who says, hey, let's both work and not have kids, or let's have one child instead of, you know, six or seven children. So you have those options, and you just have to understand what's going to come with those. But, you know, be ready for that. So when I looked at establishing what is financial freedom, I thought, you know, I'm going to search to see if someone's already thought of this. And of course, someone had. And there was a couple of articles that really kind of stood out to me that I thought that I would reference tonight. And I'll give you some, you know, highlights of those, but then give you some commentary around that just to help you kind of think through what it might mean for financial freedom. And one of the articles was How to Reach Financial Freedom, 12 Habits to Get You There. And that was from Investopedia writer Matt Danielson on December 21st, 2023. So I'm going to highlight some of those 12 habits. And then another article was from Morningstar, which was called 10 Financial Rules of Thumb You Don't Have to Follow by Amelia Fredlich on June 3rd, 2024. And I thought that really was another form of financial freedom, that you don't necessarily have to follow the rules, the norms, your neighbors. You know, people will tell you, oh, when I retire and I'm older, don't I have to cut back my equity exposure? Don't I have to get more conservative? That's some kind of a rule that someone, you know, thought up. Well, rule of thumb is what we call those. And I am suggesting that you don't necessarily have to follow those rules or follow those norms or do the same thing that your neighbor has. That's also some financial freedom when you can consider independently what works for you based on your own circumstances and situations. So when we look at the articles, I'm first going to reference the How to Reach Financial Freedom, the 12 Habits to Get You There from Matt Danielson. And then again, I'll give you some comments on it. So one of the first habits he talks about, well, he starts with financial freedom, having enough savings, investments, and cash on hand to afford the lifestyle you want for yourself and your family is an important goal for many people. It also means growing a nest egg that will allow you to retire or pursue any career you want without being driven by the need to earn a certain amount each year. So that's what his definition of financial freedom was. But some of the habits that he talks about, 12 habits, one is setting life goals. I'm going to talk about that, making a monthly budget, paying off credit cards in full, creating automatic savings, start investing now, watching your credit score, negotiate for goods and services, stay educated on financial issues, which you are if you're listening to the show, maintain your property, live below your means, get a financial advisor, and take care of your health. So those 12 tips or habits for financial freedom, we're going to talk about a little bit more in detail, and then I'm going to give you some comments around those. We are not taking calls tonight, but if you have questions, you could submit those through yourfinancialchoices.com, and you can do that at any time. It doesn't have to be just during the radio show time. It could be at any time, and I typically will respond to those via email as well. You're listening to Your Financial Choices, and we'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Are you saying out with the old, in with the new when it comes to your old car? WDIY's vehicle donation program will turn your ride into your favorite programs on Lehigh Valley Public Radio. The towing is free, all the paperwork is taken care of, and your gift is tax deductible. For more information, call 610-694-8100 extension 4 or visit wdiy.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1, also available on the WDIY app. Podcasts of prior shows are also available on many streaming services, as well as yourfinancialchoices.com, where you can also submit questions. Tonight, we are talking about financial freedom and referencing an article by Matt Danielson on Investopedia, How to Reach Financial Freedom, 12 Habits to Get You There. He starts by talking about first setting life goals. Now, obviously, that is a great start because, as they say, like in sports, you can't get the ball in the basket unless you're looking forward to the basket, or you can't get the ball in the net like in soccer unless you're visualizing that and looking ahead. So that's the same thing with setting life goals. You have to know what you're working toward, and that really contributes to the chance of success for you. So setting life goals, that is easier said than done, and I will demonstrate that. The article says, that you need to get specific about amounts and deadlines. The more specific your goals, the higher the likelihood of achieving them. I will not disagree with that specific goals are much better. I'm all about visualization. If there's something you want, visualize it. And it for me, more times than not, it happens, which is lovely. I don't over-visualize. I don't go, for the top of the mountain. But, I visualize and it really helps. So being specific about those goals is good, but sometimes you don't know what those are, especially if you're a 20-something-year-old. You might not exactly understand what those long-term goals might be. You could say, I want to retire when I'm 55. But again, at the start of your life, you don't know what that path might be. All of a sudden, you find someone, you get married, you might have a family, you buy a house, you get a car, you get a dog, the dog needs, treatment. I mean, it just can go on and on. So sometimes early on, you may not understand that. But I think when we get specific, it doesn't have to be as specific as saying, I'm going to retire at 55. You could start with smaller goals like, I am going to have an emergency reserve. I am going to live beneath my means. And that's one of his 12 habits is talking about a budget and living below your means. So setting goals can start with some specific attainable goals, which will then spur you to get excited about this and seeing how it works. And I always find that especially once someone starts saving, they get really excited about it, and then they will continue to save, and then they, it's like a snowball effect. So setting life goals, theoretically, you can have some, to me, long-range goals, which might be a little bit more murky, but those short-term goals can be, much more specific. He suggests looking at what your lifestyle requires, how much you should have in your bank account to make that possible. Again, that's the part that, to me, that's a little bit murky. I like the idea of saying, let's get an emergency reserve first. That's more concrete. That to me is the start of giving you options. I cannot tell you how important it is to have an emergency reserve. I think it makes a huge difference. When I started in this industry over 30 years ago, we used to say like 3 months and, a line of credit on a credit card, basically. Well, I just got a you know, a notice on one of my department store credit cards, which I always pay off, by the way. And the interest rate, I think, was like 34 point something. I mean, these are like loan shark rates. So if you, you know, count on a credit card, that could get you into trouble. I think it's much better to have a cash emergency reserve. And it doesn't mean that cash should be under your bed. It doesn't mean that cash should be in your pocket or in a drawer. You could put that cash to good use. Maybe right now we do see higher rates on, you know, certain savings accounts. So you could explore that and even have your emergency reserve money making a little bit for you. So I think that's a good place to start. What age is the deadline to save that amount? Again, kind of depends on your circumstances. I would like to see people having that emergency reserve, you know, as soon as they can. So when we talk about what age, that to me isn't a long-term goal. That's a short-term goal. The longer-term goal might be, you know, building up the contribution to your employer retirement account. Maybe you start with 1%, 3%, 4%, and then you build up contributing more and more. So that could be an age deadline to save, you know, X amount by a certain time. Because he suggests in this article to count backwards from your deadline age to your current age and establish financial milepost. Generally, people don't know how to, financial advisors know how to do that. I just was talking with clients today about my financial calculator that I love. I mean, you wouldn't believe what we can do on financial calculators running numbers, and it makes it very quick and easy. But typically, people don't have those financial calculators. So for someone to say, how much money are you going to need to save each, you know, year, or to have X amount of dollars at X amount of age, well, it might not be as easy for you to figure that out unless you're awesome at Excel or have one of those HP 12C calculators that, you know, us business majors got in college. So just, you know, maybe start with an emergency reserve. And then after you have your emergency reserve, you can look to say, hey, where else can I accumulate money? Could I, you know, fund a Roth IRA? That will depend on taxes, which is one of the habits he talks about in this article, understanding taxes. Because if you can put money into a Roth IRA based on your income levels, et cetera, what I love about that is you can always get out that original contribution, but now you've got some of that money working for you, growing income tax free. And for me, when we talk about options, remember, for, you know, I like clients to have options. I like you to have options. I like myself to have options. And the wonderful thing about options is when you have that emergency reserve, if an emergency comes up, you can pull from your emergency reserve without having to take on additional debt or having to pull out of a retirement account. The same thing happens with that Roth IRA. Because you can always get out your original contribution, I feel like that's a second safety net. But in the meantime, you get it working for you and working for you income tax free. Now, the earnings, you know, have other rules around them, but the original contribution can come out. And I think that just to me gives someone kind of that comfort level in saving. The second item he mentioned for a habit out of the 12 habits was making a monthly budget. Making a monthly budget and sticking to it is the best way to guarantee that all bills are paid and savings are on track. It's also a regular routine that reinforces your goals and bolsters resolve against the temptation to splurge. Well, that's wonderful. And there are a lot of people who can have a budget. I've said on the show many, many times, the people who have money are the people who know how much money they spend. Meaning the people who have budgets, who know how much they spend, are usually the ones who have money. So if you want to be one of those people, it'd be a great way to start, you know, convince yourself to have a budget. But quite often people don't have budgets, not strict budgets anyway. But there are ways to kind of still try to have a budget. We call it the funnel method. If you say, I'm going to, you know, I take home $3,000 a month and I spend $2,000 a month and I'd like to save $1,000 a month, then you have your $3,000 going to your savings account every month from your paycheck. You move $2,000 over to your checking and you pay your bills. That way, your savings account should be growing at $1,000 a month. Okay. if you find that's not happening and you're still eating into your savings account, then you're not spending $2,000 a month. You're spending more than that. So that's kind of like a very easy way to budget. I think that can help make it a little bit more doable for those people who say, I don't want a budget. I don't want a budget. It stresses them out. They can't think about it. Well, consider maybe doing this funnel method. I think it's Tom Riddle talked about it, you know, when I started working at the company 24 years ago, and I just think it's a great concept. So that could be one way to make a monthly budget. Folks, we're at the second break. If you have questions, you can send those through the website at yourfinancialchoices.com. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices, and tonight we're talking about, you know, financial freedom and what it means to you, financial independence. We've talked about my feeling of that being, you know, giving you options, that you have options. When someone has options in their financial decisions, to me that feels like a little bit more freedom than being constrained or forced into a decision because, you haven't paid attention to your financial life. My goal is to help educate people and make it not so scary and make it doable, a little step at a time. Some people are better at this than others, and it, whether that comes from experience or, you know, your upbringing, whatever it might be, you can do it. You can change. If you've had struggles with this in the past, I promise you, you can make a difference in your own financial life by small changes. So the article from Investopedia called How to Reach Financial Freedom, 12 Habits to Get You There. I'm trying to break it down and maybe make it a little bit more doable or easy for you. And that first one was setting life goals. I suggest starting with the emergency reserve. And then as we go through the show, we'll talk about other little ways that we can kind of set those goals. Making a monthly budget, we talked about the funnel method to try to simplify it for you. But if you like more details, there's Excel spreadsheets. There's all kinds of financial apps that you can use on your phone now. I have had clients who are very happy with some of the apps that are out there. Whatever is going to work for you, you should do. I mean, I have people who do envelopes. So just something that will help you be aware of how you're spending. That's the key. Be aware of how you're spending. You don't realize nowadays you walk into a store, you drop a bunch of things in the shopping cart, and then you think you can go through the fast lane, you know, 10 items or less, and it's $100. You're like, what, $100? I only got 10 things. Well, because those little things you bought, you know, weren't thinking, they were like $10 each. So it can add up, and that's why it is important to know how you're spending and what you're spending. Just some quick little tips, in fact, on that, which, you know, my husband helped me with when we first met so long ago. I've always worked retail. I worked retail from the time I was, 15. And he used to say to me, when I think, you have to buy something, it's on sale, I'm going to get a good deal, it's on sale. And he said, things always go on sale. And it was like such an epiphany. Like you get in this mode of thinking you have to buy something because it's on sale, but guaranteed, a week or two from now, they're going to have another sale. I thought that was interesting. My husband also used to say to me, if you buy one top, make sure it can go with like three outfits or something. And that always made me pause and think. And then I'd have to say, really, it's true. What am I going to wear with this? So it kind of helped manage the budget budget a little bit, and impulse items. Try to avoid impulse items that the stores obviously want you to be impulsive in your buying. So kind of be aware, some self-awareness around how you're spending and shopping, particularly when we talk about item number three, which is pay off credit cards in full. As I mentioned, the department store credit card notice that I just got was 34 point something. Now, ordinarily, I don't pay attention to interest rates on credit cards because I never carry a balance. I always pay it off. You shouldn't put something on your credit card if you can't pay for it. Now, I did mention earlier, like back in the day, we would say, oh, 3 months reserve and a credit card is your backup. But really, that could send you down a very slippery slope. There are occasionally still offers probably where people can get a 0% rate. So, you know, I'd be a little bit more, you know, amenable to that. But you really have to watch out for those credit card rates, because if you pay off minimums, you're basically, you know, going to be paying on that credit card forever. So you just have to be really, really careful. And in my comment, I made this comment recently where I said, you know, you think you have to buy it on sale, you put it on the credit card, and then if you're going to have 34% interest, was that, 10% sale really worth it, or that 5% or 25%? It may not have been worth it at all if you're now going to be paying all of that interest on that balance, you know, from the purchase that you felt like you had to make. So pay off credit cards in full. It will so empower you and make you feel so good. And what I suggest for people to do in that case, if you do have credit card balances, and you can do this on a piece of paper, you can do it on graph paper, you can do it on your computer, on a Excel spreadsheet, whatever it might be, you make a column for the name of the card provider, the balance, the interest rate, and the minimum payment. And when you see the interest rates, you know, pay off the higher credit card balances first. Now, I've heard the opposite from some financial, you know, people out there that suggest you pay off the small balance first because you're going to feel so good to pay off a card. You know, I guess if it's psychological for you and you can get rid of one card by paying off a small balance, I still would rather see someone pay off the higher interest rate cards first. And, you know, just go for it. And it makes a difference. And we've helped clients do that. And it's worked really well. And it makes you feel great to get those paid off. Occasionally, you can transfer a balance to a 0% card. That could work for some people, as long as you make sure you do pay off that card, even at the 0% rate. Like if you miss making a payment, then sometimes the interest rate will revert. So make sure you read the terms of that very carefully. Number four was create automatic savings. They say pay yourself first, enroll in your employer's retirement plan, make use of matching contributions. So create automatic savings. The first thing was the emergency reserve. The second, I would say, if you get a matching contribution from an employer plan, that would be the next best place, because that's free money. Meaning if your employer requires for you to put money into the retirement account and then they'll put something in, that's free money. You have to understand what kind of plan you have, because some employers have now adopted what we call safe harbor plans, because it minimizes the administration on that plan for the employers. And a safe harbor, the employer doesn't require a match. They will put the money in regardless, meaning they'll put 3% of your pay into the employer plan. So you know you're getting that whether you do or not. But some will say, if you put in 3, they'll put in 3. If you put in 6, they'll put in 3. If you put in 10, they'll put in 3, whatever it might be. So you want to put in the amount to get the match. And if you qualify for a Roth, that could be the next place you go. And if you have even more money after that, then you could continue to put into your 401k at work if you want that tax deferral. But enough to get the match, first emergency reserve, then enough in your employer plan to get the match, then maybe the Roth IRA, because you can tap that. Whereas if you put more and more money in the retirement account at work, even if you're not getting a match, you might not be able to tap that, because there's, you know, rules around 401ks. You might not be able to take a distribution. Whereas I mentioned, in the Roth, you might be able to still get that original contribution if you need it. So it's a little bit more flexible. What did I say financial freedom is? Options. I like you to have options. Folks, we're at the halfway point. We're talking about financial freedom and what that might mean for you and just exploring some thoughts around that. If you have questions, you can email those through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back. We are talking about financial freedom this evening. If you have questions, you can email those through yourfinancialchoices.com. We're not taking calls this evening, but we are talking about financial freedom and referencing back to, I like to give credit for the people who write these articles, because I think Investopedia does a great job as well, and Morningstar, How to Reach Financial Freedom, 12 Habits to Get You There by Matt Danielson, which was back in December 21 of 2023, talking about creating automatic savings. We talked about doing that through the employer plan. You could also do that, as I mentioned, if you're eligible to do a Roth. You've got your emergency reserves in my story. You're getting the match at work if it's available. Your income is within the thresholds to allow you to put money into a Roth. You can do that automatically as well, whether you do it monthly, quarterly, you know, at tax time, whatever it might be. You can set that up to be automatic as well. And don't forget about some other automatic savings options that may be available to you through retirement benefit or, you know, employer benefits. Because if you work at a company that offers perhaps a high deductible health plan and you participate, whether you're single or participate as a family, if you have a qualified high deductible health plan, you would be eligible for a health savings account. Health savings account also gives you huge, gigantic tax savings. It saves in when you do it through your employer payroll, it saves you federal tax, state tax, local tax, Medicare tax. It's just incredible. It's a great way to save. It can go into a health savings account that you can tap for medical expenses that you might have. To the extent you don't think you might need that money for medical expenses today, you can invest it and you can get tax-free earnings on that health savings account. And you can take it with you when you leave. Very different than a flexible savings account. A flexible savings account is also another way to do kind of automatic savings, but that's a use it or lose it plan. And you may not have a high deductible health plan, but have a option to do a flexible spending account. So that works. That still saves you some income tax. That's great. You can't save as much in a flexible spending account as you might the health savings account under like a family provision. But you can't have a health savings account unless you have a high deductible health plan. And you cannot have a flexible spending account and a health savings account, one or the other. So you just got to make sure you're following the rules. But that's another automatic way to save and that you can take it with you and invest. And that's, you know, really great. So some people can also do automatic savings just into a brokerage account, their individual account. Let's say you've done the employer retirement account, you've done maybe a Roth IRA, you've done your HSA, you can also just have money go into an investment account as well. And that was Matthew's next point, start investing now. He says bad stock markets, known as bear markets, can make people question the wisdom of investing, but historically there's been no better way to grow your money. The magic of compound interest alone will grow your money exponentially, but you need a lot of time to achieve meaningful growth. However, remember that for everyone except professional investors, it would be a mistake to attempt the kind of stock picking made famous by billionaires like Warren Buffett. Instead, open an online brokerage account that makes it easy for you to learn how to invest, create a manageable portfolio, and make weekly or monthly contributions to it automatically. So, you know, once you kind of get your arms around your savings, what I always tell people is have that money work for you because you worked hard for it. So when you work hard you know, in your work life, and you work hard in, you know, saving and being smart about how you're spending and not putting things on credit cards, and you kind of maybe have somewhat of a budget, all of a sudden you start building up this money and you want to invest it. You want it to work for you. And how well it's going to work for you probably depends on your risk tolerance, how much exposure you have to equities versus, you know, fixed income like bonds. But you will start to get your feet wet and hopefully kind of dip your toe in the water with understanding how some of these different asset classes will work, in that will inform you in your future investing. Okay, so that's a great way to get started, whether it's your savings account, you get a better interest rate, looking, you know, to shopping around for, you know, maybe an online money market account or online savings account that's going to pay you more than maybe a checking account. The next dip in the water might be, oh, I have this employer retirement plan. They have this menu of options. What are those options? What kind of returns do they have on those options? What are the expenses to those different menu options of investments? Oh, now I'm going to start my own Roth IRA. Where should I do that? How do I invest? How do I pay for those investments? Do I pay for those investments? So you start learning little by little, and you're going to, you know, it's going to a snowball. Okay. Now, we talked about the credit cards. We talked about saving, having an emergency reserve, having some, you know, extra savings on the side. All of that, and paying off credit cards and how you're paying for bills, having that budget, all of that is going to impact your credit score. And that's his number six. And your credit score is important. He says your credit score is a very important number that determines the interest rate you're offered when buying a car or home. It also impacts the amount you pay for a range of other essentials, from car insurance to life insurance. Well, the credit score also impacts, you know, whether you can even rent sometimes. So, and what kind of credit would be extended to you. So paying attention to your credit score is very important, and knowing what impacts that. And what impacts that is paying your bills on time, not having too much debt, you know, what is your debt to income ratio, that kind of thing. So be aware that credit scores do impact your options, which is what I said, you know, what kind of options you have on, you know, buying a house in the future or buying a car in the future. Know how it gets impacted. All right. And then you can also typically get a free credit report. If you weren't aware of that, that's on Experian.com, TransUnion.com, or Equifax.com. Make sure that you're going to the legitimate site. And those are available, I think, once a year from any of the three agencies, like, meaning I think you can get three, because one from each, free to, you know, check out your credit report. And that's good to be aware of what that looks like as well. Now, his number seven to me makes me a little uncomfortable. He says negotiate for goods and services. Now, I work with some people who are very good at negotiating for goods and services. Personally, from my perspective, when I work with professionals or I work with organizations, you know, I typically understand what I'm going to buy and know what I want to buy and what I want to pay. And if we agree, then, you know, that's the end. I'm not going to sit and negotiate. But he says that you should negotiate for goods and services. And that, you know, you should conquer your fear of it, because it could save you thousands of dollars each year. You know, I see that happening maybe at a market. I'm not sure I would see it at, you know, the local grocery store. I don't think I'm going to be able to negotiate the cost of a loaf of bread. So I think you have to be kind of careful. Maybe, you know, in certain, you know, if you're going to, I don't know, buy a car, maybe, I guess. Buy a house, I could see some negotiation going on there, but it depends on what goods and services you get. Number eight, stay educated on financial issues. Obviously, I hope our listeners are getting educated on financial issues by listening to this show and tuning into your financial choices. And doing some of those steps that we already talked about, whether you're aware of an emergency reserve, setting up that funnel method, you know, being aware of your credit score, look at the interest rate on credit cards if you're carrying balances. Awareness, that's really part of the key here. So stay educated on financial issues. And the more you educate yourself, the more options that are going to be available to you. That's the part I love so much. They also mentioned tax laws. So, you know, I'm also a CPA and I'm aware of tax laws. And, you know, not all financial advisors are. In fact, they usually have handcuffs around any kind of tax advice that they can give. So you have to be careful who you're talking to and what kind of advice you're getting or what kind of advice you're not getting and you don't even realize it. You know, you don't know what you don't know. And that's why it's really important to kind of tune in to what's going on in your financial life. I love tax returns. I love looking at tax returns. I think they tell a story. I love stories. I can look at a tax return and tell a lot about someone. I can tell about their personality. I can tell about their lifestyle. Once in a while, I might get stumped. But the tax return certainly tells a story, and I don't know how many people actually sit down and look at their tax return and say, what is this telling me? What is this telling me? If I don't see any interest and I don't see any dividends, that tells me you don't have any savings. If I see, you know, someone who's giving tons of money to charity and they have an IRA and they're, you know, over 70 and a half and I don't see a qualified charitable distribution, I think, well, they don't know about the tax savings that they may, you know, be able to get. So I can tell if someone's conservative in their investments or a little bit more aggressive. I can tell if someone's, you know, saving for retirement. So the story, you know, understanding taxes is really important, and it can make a big difference in cash flow with some of the decisions that you make. If you're aware of, you know, you take an action in one area of your financial life, and you have to understand the impact of that, the ripple effect of your decision. You decide, hey, I'm going to take that $50,000 out of my IRA because I want to go on the trip of a lifetime, and I'm going to do it, and I'm going to do it, you know, all at once. Where if you stopped and you thought about it and thought it through, remember, be proactive, not reactive, you might have been able to do the same thing and saved, you know, I'm going to make this up. Maybe the taking out the $50,000 is going to cost, you know, $12,000 worth of taxes. And if we had done it a little bit smarter, you know, maybe it would have only been, you know, $8,000 of taxes. I'm just making this up. Maybe it could have been done over 2 years. Maybe you want to be thinking, oh, I'm going to take that trip in 3 years. I haven't started collecting Social Security yet. I have some cash in the bank I can use. Well, maybe we can play tax brackets and get some of that money out at a lower tax rate today than it might be in the future if you did it all at once. So stay educated on financial issues, understand tax law, financial news, developments in the stock market. And I would say being educated about the stock market is, you know, be careful of what you're listening to and what you're reading. You know, people think there's breaking news every single day. It cracks me up. I'm always saying, oh, breaking news, the market's up. Oh, breaking news, the market's down. You know, breaking news because they want you to tune in and listen and scare you. And we have, you know, charts showing how, you know, impacted the market is over like world events. And it's really sad when you think that the market kind of bakes it in within 10 days. Like that's the average. A big world event can happen. I mean, I think other than the, you know, what was it? The oil embargo way back when, the impact to the market is a very short period of time. So being able to have an emergency reserve, a short-term reserve, your five-year bucket, we like to talk about buckets, that will kind of preserve your sanity and make you not like tune in every second. Because the other thing is people will say, oh, the market was up, you know, 1% today and my portfolio wasn't. Well, if you weren't 100% in the market, then you wouldn't see your portfolio go up 1% for the day because you weren't in the market 100%. So you have to understand what's happening in the market. Typically, when we're hearing about that, it's usually the S&P, the Dow, the NASDAQ, and that's equities. And quite often we see people more diversified with some allocation to fixed income bonds. So you're not going to have 100% allocation to the market. So when we talk about the returns in the market, you're not going to necessarily see those same kinds of returns. Folks, we are at the last break. If you have questions, you could send those through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. We're not live tonight, so that's what we're doing. And I'll answer those questions anytime. It doesn't have to be just during the show. And we'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services, including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Did you know your phone is a radio? You can tune in to WDIY anywhere on the go with WDIY's phone app. Download for free from the Apple or Google store, and your phone will become your trusted radio. The easy-to-use app lets you listen to WDIY on your phone live and access your favorite music shows on demand. Download and share the WDIY app with your friends and family and introduce them to Many Choices, Real Voices.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1. Podcasts and prior shows are available on many streaming services, as well as WDIY.org under Public Affairs and on the website, yourfinancialchoices.com, where you can also send questions. We're talking about financial freedom tonight. We've been referencing an article called The 12 Habits. Let me just see. How to Reach Financial Freedom, 12 Habits to Get You There by Matt Danielson at from Investopedia. And number 9 was maintain your property. Taking care of good care of your property makes everything from cars and lawnmowers to shoes and clothes last longer. Cost of maintenance is a fraction of the cost of replacement. It's an investment not to be missed. I'll tell you some quick stories. I think I'm going to run out of time to get to my next article, but some stories. I have a 2012 car that I bought in 2016. So it was already 4 years old when I bought it. And we are now in 2024, and I still have that same car. So that's a 12-year-old car that I have had for 8 years. It looks brand new. I take very good care of it. I love my car. And I continue to think the maintenance on it is less than I would pay for a brand new car. And it's easy. And I'm a practical person, but I have a nice car, but I take good care of it. We have a pool, and we have a cleaner for the pool, and we've had that cleaner for the pool since 2007, and it's in the pool all the time, and my husband just continues to repair it. I think when we got it back in 2007, it was like $1,000, and, you know, he'll fix the ball bearings, he'll fix the little parts. You know, when it has broken, it's, you know, technically broken any number of times, my husband just pulls it out, takes it apart, investigates, goes to the, you know, pool store, buys the part, the ball bearings, whatever it might be, little hooks and this and that, and fixes it. And, you know, we haven't had to buy a new one in all that time. And to, you know, I think what happens is we get a kick out of this. You know, we like maintaining the property and taking care of things. We're very, you know, practical people. So you can do it too. It sometimes just takes, you know, forethought, you know, a little investment of your time and a little investigating. And you, there's so much you can do now by fixing things yourself, just searching them on, you know, YouTube. Number 10, live below your means. This is really, really important. Now, they say mastering a frugal lifestyle means developing a mindset focused on living a good life with less, and it's easier than you think. I'm not so sure I buy into the whole frugal thing. I mean, there are a lot of people I know who are very frugal, and they're very well off, but, you know, I'm not sure they're living their lives either. So when we talk about options, and, you know, what my husband and I had talked about when we were first together was we didn't want to have to think so much when we wanted to buy something. We didn't want to have to, like, have big dilemmas. And what I would say is you want to be smart about how you're spending. Spend below your means for sure. But I also think you should live your life a little. So you got to give yourself a little bit of room. You know, if you get a bonus and, you know, sometimes people will say, well, it wasn't a bonus I was counting on. I can save that money and put it away. That's great. And that could be one of your goals. And that's a way to reach maybe your financial freedom a lot faster. At the same time, you worked hard, you got that bonus. Maybe, you know, go out for a nice dinner, you know, do something like that. Don't blow the whole thing, but, you know, reward yourself a little bit. So live below your means, but also live. Just another example, and I'm sorry I keep using myself as an example, but, you know, this is my storytelling. My husband and I, when we bought the home that we're in now, we bought it based on just his salary. We did not factor in my working. And in that way, if anything happened to, you know, one of us or a job, it's not as, you know, dire of a circumstance because one of us at least would be working. So my daughter right now is coming back to the area and she's looking at apartments and they're doing the same thing. They're having to look in Philly, so it's not cheap. And they are also considering just one salary. And I think, you know, I love that I hear that they're doing that. That means they're living below their means. In the event someone loses a job, it might not be as tight because they only counted on one salary in what they were purchasing. So living below your means makes a difference. You know, I've given an example when we used to take our kids out and we have three kids, they're all adults and grown now. But when they were young, we'd go to a restaurant and they'd say, you know, what would you like to drink? And they'd say water, 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 water. Cause you know, I just thought it was incredible to pay, you know, $2 for like a soda, and soda's not good for you anyway. And they still do that today. It cracks me up. Very funny. Number 11 was get a financial advisor. I think there was a study by Vanguard that said that people that did indicate that it seems that people do better with a financial advisor. One thing I notice with clients is I think it helps the procrastination. People sometimes don't move forward on maybe part of their goals or part of their, you know, steps to financial freedom or to, you know, whatever it might be that they need to attend to. And I think when you have a financial advisor partnering with you, you're kind of both working together for that goal, that end goal. You know, if you're successful, we're successful kind of thing. So it kind of helps spur accountability. And I think that makes a big difference. And you think, well, I can get that at home, right? But we're not always as, forgiving of a partner who's telling us what to do with our money or to save or to, you know, spend less. Whereas, you know, we walk into a financial advisor's office and all of a sudden, oh, sure, yeah, I'll do that. I'll do that. And we might not want our loved one telling us to do it, but we seem to listen when a financial advisor does. But it's not just that. A financial advisor comes with, think about how many experiences they've had. You know, it might be your first time opening a 529 education account for your grandchild. It might be your first time where you have to do a qualified charitable distribution out of an IRA. It's the advisor's, you know, thousandth time. You know, it's just, we've seen almost all of it. We've seen it so many times before. It's just what we do. And so sometimes what happens when you work with a financial advisor is that you're benefiting from all of that experience and you're hitting the ground, you know, you're hitting going to home base from third base. You're not having to start at home with the hit. You're already on third. So that kind of helps as well. Take care of your health. I say this all the time. Your best asset, your biggest asset, your most important asset is your health. Taking care of your health makes a big difference in your ability to be able to work, to save, to take care of your family, to do that maintenance of whatever it might be, the house, the yard, the lawnmower. So taking care of your health, and it saves money because you're not putting out so much money for medical treatment, medical care, etc. Yes, we have health insurance, but sometimes we still will have co-pays for specialists or, you know, possibly other out-of-pocket or prescription coverage, things like that. So trying to take care of your health is always a goal, or you hope would be a goal. And don't forget that in your pursuit of happiness. Don't be working 80 hours a week, for the goals of, you know, accumulating so much wealth that, you know, you drop dead of a heart attack. So just, you know, balance. I'm a Libra and I like balance. So that's kind of the 12 items of financial freedom. The Morningstar article talked about the 10 financial rules of thumb you don't have to follow. And I thought that was really cool because to me, that's financial freedom as well, that I can, you know, do it my way basically, but with obvious education and guidance and, you know, navigating the smart answers, but the options. Rule of thumb number one was delay Social Security as long as possible. That all depends. I'm going to run through these really fast because I'm not going to be able to cover them all. But you'll hear that from someone and it may not be appropriate for you. It could be appropriate in a lot of circumstances, but may not be appropriate to you. So don't necessarily follow that rule of thumb. Rule of thumb number two was never take a loan from your 401k. Well, it may or may not make sense for you to take a loan from your 401k. I don't see people doing it that often these days. But you could. Sometimes people take it to maybe make a first home purchase. You know, it depends on your circumstances. So that could be an option for you. Usually there's a cost fee for originating the loan, and then there's an interest rate that you have to pay on that loan, but you are paying it to yourself. Rule number three, prioritize paying down your mortgage. May not make sense. I'm asking everybody, what's your mortgage rate? Oh, 2.5. Well, don't pay that off. Don't pay that down then if you're getting a better return in the market or even a better return in your bank account. That's called leverage when you're paying less than what you could be earning. So paying down your mortgage may not make sense for some of you. Rule number four, prioritize diversification in investing. Well, I'm not sure what is wrong with that rule of thumb because I think that's critical. Diversification investing. You don't want everything moving the same way. You don't want all your eggs in one basket. So diversifying can make sense. And then she talks about when to break it and when to follow it. Rule number five, buying the dip. She said that statistically that doesn't always work. Sometimes when you're buying the dip, you continue to go down. We have stats that show that if you're actually buying at the peak of the market, your investment can go up. So I don't have the site for that article. I'm just saying that I've seen some of those statistics. So investigate that more if you want to know more about it. She mentions rule of thumb, withdraw no more than 4% annually from your retirement portfolio. Well, that all just depends too. It depends on your longevity. It depends on your investment returns. It depends on your cash flow and how you're spending. I don't like that rule of thumb. I really just don't like that rule of thumb. I try not to pay attention to it. Personally, I think it's individual and it's individual to you. It's like your thumbprint. Some other rules of thumb she talked about, maximizing matching contributions on your employer's retirement savings plans. Yes, we talked about that earlier. That could make sense. But we really want to make sure that you're paying off your high interest debt, your credit cards, and that you have that emergency reserve. To me, that's even more important. You don't want to put money into your 401k to get a match when you're paying 34% interest on a credit card because the match isn't going to be worth the cost of that credit card. And then they have some other items, prioritize hedges against inflation, hold 100 minus your age in stocks. I haven't heard that one, and I don't believe in that at all. I don't think age should have anything to do with risk tolerance, but that's just me. Rule of thumb, retirement is the end of work. And I guess that was it. And what she talked about there is switching from saving to a spending mindset. So some good articles, though. I wish I would have had more time to talk about the Morningstar one. But basically what I want to communicate is financial freedom is personal. It's personal to you. I don't think that you should restrict yourself on what you think that means. But education is the great place to start. Education. And visualization and setting some small goals to get you started, because I think once you set some goals, you get excited and you keep going with them. And it's very, very empowering. And I hope that this show helps do that. There's lots of topics we've covered over the years, many, many years. And the podcasts of prior shows are available on WDIY.org under Public Affairs. Scroll down to Your Financial Choices, also available on YourFinancialChoices.com. And then I believe about 2 weeks worth of prior shows are available on the WDIY app as well. And you can look for topics that may be of interest, whether we're talking about investment education, retirement planning, what kind of retirement accounts, estate planning. So that falls into that habit of being educated and making sure that you have options for yourself. And most importantly, that you can be proactive, not reactive, because when we're in front of our decisions, we have many more options. Thank you, listeners, for listening. Thank you, James, for being here. Again, if you ever have questions, they can go through yourfinancialchoices.com. We have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music coming up. And be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.
If you enjoyed this program, please go to the WDIY website or app to share or become a WDIY member.